Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Stack Overflow podcast, a place to talk all things software and technology. I'm Ryan Donovan, and we have a special episode today where we are talking about some of our community team, and we're joined today by our Senior VP of Community, Philippe Podet. How you doing, Philippe?
Well, thanks, Ryan. Good to be back on the podcast. As you know, I was here about 4 years ago.
That's right. And I remember when you were hired, we were talking about the trust and safety position you were hiring into, and today we have the whole trust and safety team.
Yep, including Cesar, who founded this team.
That's right. I believe he hired you, yeah?
Yep, he did.
So we are doing something a little different. We have everybody's using aliases today, same as you use on the platform. Can you tell us a little bit about why that is?
Yeah, Ryan, this is a deliberate choice today to protect the real-world identities of this team. They make the life difficult for some folks who would rather they weren't around.
Right.
And as a result, we try to keep their identities as safe as we possibly can, with the exception of Cesar, who's pretty open about his identity, and me. Right. The rest of this group is going under aliases.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you here. And why don't we go around and have everybody introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about what your domain is on the team. We'd start with Cesar.
Sure. My name on the platform is Cesar M, and I manage our trust and safety in our community support teams. So as Philippe has, as you already have called out, actually, and that Philippe hates to be called, the fact to be called out is I did hire him. He used to report to me as the first hire, actually, of the trust and safety team after it was founded. And I've had the pleasure of working for him ever since he became my VP. So I'm really happy that I did hire him.
Nice. Bella, why don't you go next?
Yeah, I am Bella Blue. I go by Bella. I am the trust and safety team lead for this team. My role basically is handling and leading the operations of our day-to-day tasks, making sure everybody has what they need, making sure projects are on time and moving along, and just generally being a thorn in Caesar's side, making sure that he has everything that he needs too.
Emerson, let's go in order of seniority.
All right. Howdy, everyone. Emerson, I am one of the community managers for Trust and Safety, and I support the day-to-day obligations, like when you write into the contact form or supporting some of our product teams.
And last but not least, the new kid on the block.
Yep. Hi, I'm Frog. I'm a community manager on the Trust and Safety team, and I started here just back in January. This is a fast-paced team. There's always a lot going on, but I enormously appreciate the team and how supportive they are in that learning process. My day-to-day is that sometimes I'll be taking tickets, issues that get raised to us by the community or things we identify. Other days, I am investigating data, finding patterns, and turning that into something understandable and actionable. And then I'll also work with one of our development teams, as all of us do, bringing the community perspective to that work and helping understand the shape of the platform.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. Cesar, since you sort of started this team, and Philippe, can you tell us a little bit about what trust and safety is and what it means here at Stack Overflow?
Sure. I think the question of what is trust and safety is a very, very interesting one. And it's very funny to me that I've had sort of two titles throughout my career, a community manager and trust and safety community manager. And both of them can be incredibly hard to explain. So I did not do many favors myself there. Most people don't immediately understand what my job is when I say my title, right? So I think trust and safety also varies from platform to platform. But there are some similarities. I like to explain it in a manner similar using pulling something from InfoSec. So InfoSec usually cares about the security, the integrity, and the confiability of information, right? And in the same way, trust and safety, broadly speaking, is also worried about those things. We're worried about confiability, integrity, and security of information. But in our case, it's not proprietary company information, it's the information on our platforms, right? So we care about that the information is secure, meaning it's not causing harm, it's not promoting violence, it's not promoting extremist organizations. We are worried about its integrity. So we don't want users abusing voting, for example, to and make a question or an answer prominent when it's not. So in that way, we care about the integrity and the trust that people have about the information on our platform. And then in terms of confiability, that's where trust also comes in. We care about that people have a platform where they can come and trust that if they participate, they'll be safe to do so. And trust that the things they read and the people they interact with are genuinely there interacting and participating. So for example, that they're not interacting with a malicious actor or they're not interacting with an AI that is pretending to be a human trying to change their beliefs, for example.
Right.
So I think trust and safety largely is about making sure that a human can have the experience they want on our platform while being able to trust that this experience is truthful, valid, and that they can safely be here.
Brian, I'm always interested in, with trust and safety folks, one of the questions I love to ask them is like, why trust and safety? Why do you do this work? And I'm curious what the answers here with this group are.
I think, well, you know, I started the team, so you could ask me why, well, why the hell did you start it? Which is, you know, why the hell do we want to have it? And the reason I started it is because a large part of this job had been done historically by community managers of Stack Overflow. And naturally, I was hired as a community manager, and the trust and safety team to this day is inside the community department, which is, I think, the correct department for it to be in. But the reason I started it is because this is a specialized function. This is not the same as community managers. And many of the things that we have to see, many of the things that we have to deal with, there are some that I don't want every community manager to have to deal with. For example, sadly, when we have cases of child pornography being posted on the platform, we are the team that is trained, that has the processes, that know how to deal with, where to report, when to contact law enforcement. But it can be traumatizing to have someone to see those images. And I don't want every community manager to be liable and part of their job to see those images, right? This is a specialized function that cares about these subjects and these matters that most people would rather not want to think of. And because of that, because most people would rather not have to think about this, it means that it's a special domain knowledge that people who develop and who want to work on it should be recognized that, hey, they're part of a different team. What they're doing is not just community management, even if it involves a ton of community management. So that's why I advocated for it to be started. But if anyone on the team wants to complement that, there are many other reasons for why trust and safety.
I mean, for me, I love what Caesar said about how InfoSec is basically system-centric. Trust and safety is people-centric. Where InfoSec is keeping the system safe, we are working to try to keep people safe. And doing that job, you know, I get a lot of gain from that. It really makes me happy, if you would, to do that. It is also this integral part of myself where I walk into a room or I walk into a space and I always can try to see like what could possibly go wrong here. It's called trust and safety brain. And not a lot of people have that. It's not a fun thing to have, but it's done so that people have a good time. Like if you go into a party and you're like, oh, we don't have enough napkins, that's going to be a problem if there's a mess. It's the same thing as if I walk into a community and I see that there are people not treating each other well. How can we make that better? It's a strange little analogy, but it's something that I just do without thinking. And I truly believe that communities, especially online communities, are a place where people from around the world can come together and really do some amazing things. And they only can do that if the community itself is, you know, safe and people feel that they're able to share openly and without the danger of being harmed.
Yeah.
The community brain part that Bella raised, I think I jokingly, but maybe not so jokingly, like to put it as, well, part of the job is to look at things and imagine all the ways it could go wrong. And then Absolutely. Try not to develop anxiety disorder from it.
Right. Yes.
In the industry, we refer to that as resilience.
Right. Yes.
Emerson Frog, do you want to talk about why you joined or what drew you to it?
I think for a lot of people like myself, it kind of happens organically. I started just in an account support role that was primarily focused on account integrity and realized I had some capabilities of sussing out when things were, you know, maybe suspicious in like account overtakes and people getting hacked and things like that. And then you can't just go to college thinking that you're going to be a trust and safety professional because you don't know if you have what I mentioned earlier, the resilience, or you don't have the propensity to always be thinking about imminent risks and that thinking about those imminent risks doesn't burn you out. So I started out in that role and it kind of organically fell in line over time where then I started handling bigger and bigger risks. And I found that I enjoy the area of these types of risks and preventing them from, you know, a normal everyday user from ever even encountering them. And that's, yeah, led me to here at Stack Overflow now.
I do like that idea of thinking about it organically. I would say for myself, it's a bit silly to say, but I kind of made my way here by luck. I originally imagined myself as a software engineer. I used to work in the intersection of criminal justice and digital forensics, keeping online platforms safe by, you know, digging through all the data to float harmful behaviors to the top. Very related to this work. And I was there because I honestly love that game, the process of problem solving that emerges out of just the mess, the beautiful mess of different actors in especially online communities, right? Mm-hmm. And then separately, in my own time, I found an online community that I love and I spent a lot of time helping grow it, helping moderate, helping policy, event running and safety. And these things came together into a skill set where I was, you know, like perfectly positioned for trust and safety. And I was like, oh my gosh, this actually sounds exactly up my alley.
So Detective Frog then.
oh yes.
So to sort of piggyback on the InfoSec metaphor, a lot of, you know, InfoSec is putting out fires, handling incidents, but there's also shoring up and preventing for the future. How much of this job is handling those on-the-spot incidents and how much of it is sort of preparing for future incidents, making it a safer place?
All of it. every day is different. We have this joke, like, yes, we plan things out. We have an idea of what we would like to do. We have our core work, which is handling incidents, you know, that have come in that are not P1s or emergencies. And the thing is with trust and safety work, that is something that we joke about as well. Every single thing that we're dealing with is a P1 to somebody. Mm-hmm. If somebody is writing in saying, this person called me a jerk on the platform, to them, that is an emergency. And we should handle that in a very fast way. Mm-hmm. However, we absolutely know that just like today, we had two tickets of things that were much more of an emergency, which it had to deal with sensitive images on the platform. And another one where there was somebody who was glorifying harm to others. Mm-hmm. Those are things where we have to immediately go and handle. We have to go immediately fix it and decide what that looks like. What is beautiful about this team is that we are so just trained and ready to have those hard conversations, to just jump into the work, that those things get handled pretty quickly. Another thing that we do is we are thought leaders in various product teams, pointing out where things can go wrong as they start building these products. It's not always fun. It is sometimes difficult. There can be a lot of friction with that. However, what we believe trust and safety to be is it's cost effective if we build it first, then rather us have to fix it after it comes through. But yeah, it is. That's all of our work, is literally triaging P1s.
Hey, Bella,
Yeah.
Can we talk for a second about one of my favorite determination moments that this team did, which was around the letter Z?
Okay. That one was interesting. That one was one of those times where we had to make a widespread decision, something that was going to involve the entire platform. And we had to do that in a matter of days. There is imagery out there, the Z imagery, that had been used by extremist groups to glorify the violence in the Ukraine. Mm. And we had to make a determination very quickly whether or not we would allow this image to be on the platform. That took, I would say, a few hours of us deciding, because when we make these decisions, we don't just think about the thing that is happening right now. We have to try to future-proof these policies. We have to also think about free speech. We have to also think about, especially for our platform, is there educational context mm-hmm. with this image? Because it is a question and answer site. And while something may be upsetting to somebody, there could be a legitimate question there. And there's no better counter speech to especially dangerous speech than education. So we sat and we, one, had to validate whether or not this image was in fact being used as dangerous speech or hate speech or promoting violence. It was determined that it was. We then had to decide whether or not there was any kind of educational validity to this image. And we determined that there was not, that this was just an image to be used to promote violence. We then had to craft the comms, because this is, again, we don't like creating ad hoc policy. And so we were very mindful in how we were going to approach this and how we were going to educate the community, because that is what policy essentially is. It's education. It is us setting guidelines and what is acceptable and what is not. We had to then post that and then take in any kind of questions that were potentially come, because our communities are founded by incredibly intelligent people who absolutely will push back on our policies. And we welcome that, because we don't believe that we are the smartest people in the room every time. While we do have subject matter expertise, it is important that these policies are absolutely tailored to the communities in which they serve. Mm-hmm. And so we sat and we listened to any kind of feedback. And at the end, it went over incredibly well, and it was able to be implemented within, I think, 48 hours.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, you talk about the issues of glorifying violence. Today, ironically, or coincidentally, June 6th is the anniversary of D-Day, and could be seen as a celebration of that is a glorification of violence. So I wonder, how do you consider those issues, and what kind of pushback did you get?
For the Z imagery, there wasn't really any pushback. The community just wanted to have a determination by staff so they knew what was okay or not. Because again, these are communities. They want to know what the community norms are. They want to know what the expectations are. That's the most important thing about writing policy, is to make sure that it is clear and understandable, or as Caesar likes to say, useful and usable. Mm-hmm. Because nobody wants to break the rules. Unless you're a troll, unless that is your whole point. So there wasn't really any kind of pushback. They were more like, thank you for that clarification. So now that we know that this is over the line, we won't do it. We did have follow-up questions, like, where do you draw that line?
Right.
And for us, it was that this cannot be construed as anything else, that this image was created to glorify violence against a specific group of people. Mm. And it was not used in any other way. Because that is something we do have to determine. Could this be construed any other way? Could this be construed as pride in one's country? Could this be construed as patriotism, if you will? And for this image specifically, we could not justify that it could be used in any other way other than to intimidate, mm-hmm. harass, and glorify violence against another group of people.
Which actually raises another interesting thought here. Any of you, Cesar maybe, in your career, you've had to walk this tightrope about what you tell a community when you really can't say anything. I mean, what are the considerations that you think about when you have to discuss the indescribable with your community?
Yeah, I think that's a very hard one. And yes, we often have to walk that tightrope, but there's a lot that goes through my mind when we're making these types of determinations. The first is, I very much believe in transparency and truthfulness, right? So I always want to be, and I challenge everyone regularly on this thing, to be as transparent as we can. But that doesn't mean that we're always going to be fully, or that we always have to be fully, entirely, 100% transparent. I'll give you an easy example. And it's going to be a little bit of a straw man, so I apologize, but it's easy. I mentioned CSAM. We don't have to say we deleted a CSAM image to the community and then show the image and say that's why we deleted it, because it was CSAM.
Just jumping in, CSAM, child sexual abuse material.
Yes, thank you. Acronyms and professionals, yes. yeah, we don't have to show the image just to be transparent, mm-hmm. right? And then that's obvious. That's the straw man. There's a different argument to be had. Do we have to say that we suspended someone because they posted child sexual abuse material? Mm-hmm. And that has a bunch of other considerations, including legal ones of, can we say it? Can we not? Because we can't make the termination of a crime. There's a lot that go in. So a lot of these have a lot of angles to consider. And that's part of what I always talk about, which is think about it holistically. We want to be transparent, but can we? The first is, can we? A lot of times, mm-hmm. we can't. That settles it. The second is, even if we can, should we? And then there are things where we shouldn't. For example, if we are fully transparent about how our abuse prevention methods work, we're probably enabling a lot of bad actors to know exactly how to bypass our abuse prevention methods. And so that's why often we don't talk about what tooling we have, what tooling we don't have, and exactly how that tooling works. Now, a different example. Let's say we do some type of user tracking, right? Be it through cookies, device fingerprinting, or whatever it is. Do we need to disclose that we do that type of user tracking? Well, legally, in some regions, yes. Now, should we disclose that we do some type of user tracking? I would say, even if not legally mandated, we should. Mm-hmm. We should disclose that we do it. But maybe we don't have to disclose exactly how we do it, because that enables malicious actors to attempt to bypass it. So it's always a balance of how much you should give to the public, how much should be public knowledge, and how much you can keep private with good justification. Mm-hmm. Anything that you keep private, I believe, needs to have a good justification for why this shouldn't come out to the public. And that justification should be clear and consider appropriate by everyone involved. So when we're making these calls with the team, I always ask folks, like, okay, but why don't we want to reveal this? And there has to be a explicit why that people agree upon that outweighs the desire for transparency and publicity. Broadly, that's a framework. Mm-hmm. Bella and Emerson may have more specifics to add about different cases, but I think that's broadly the framework.
The only thing I would add there is that the other thing that we do absolutely consider is not just the privacy of all the users, but also the privacy of the one who violated the policy, because that is also incredibly important. Yes, they did a bad thing, if you will, like if you would constitute it as bad. It's black and white. They violated the policy or they didn't. We're not here to make moral judgments against anyone. But it does not mean that they should be publicly called out. That sometimes is incredibly difficult, especially when their impact was widespread. And so that is a line that we absolutely have to consider as well, is that even though they absolutely violated one of our policies, that does not mean that they should be called out in the public square, if you will.
If I may go on a tangent, Bella reminded me of something that this isn't fully thought out yet. So I'm going to disclaim that this is, so far, has been private thoughts. No one has heard this, you know,
you get an exclusive.
Yes. You get an exclusive preview right here.
I'm scared.
Yeah, the team knows to be scared when they say that. I've been thinking. It's always a problem. So from what Bella's saying, I've been thinking a lot about this concept of, if you really buy into the notion of democracy and the rule of law and fair judgment and all of that, which I do, and it's part of why I'm in this job, it doesn't matter what the person did. They still deserve a defense. They still deserve to have their rights respected. Doesn't matter how fundamentally bad we've screwed up, how bad the crime you've committed is, you still have a right to a fair trial. Right. And obviously, we're not holding trials here. It's not what we do in trust and safety. But I'm from Brazil, and in Brazilian justice, we have, a few years ago, instituted something that we call a judge of guarantees, which is essentially a different judge that oversees the criminal proceedings and criminal investigations from the police, but they're not the one who will be trialing the case. They oversee the investigation phase to ensure that the rights of the person being investigated are being respected. So they're the ones issuing warrants and authorizing searches and looking to bank statements, all of that stuff. And I think for trust and safety, there might be something worth thinking about in that space. Obviously, like I said, very different from a trial. We're not a court of law. We're nowhere near the same standards.
Right, but there is a process, and the process has to be followed for everybody to have a fair shake.
Exactly. And it plays into what Bell is saying. It's obvious to us that they, doesn't matter how badly someone screwed up, they don't deserve to be scrutinized and exposed to the public in general, right? We're not trying to encourage vigilante mobs, digital war, offline, or whatever. And so I've been playing with this concept of, if you have a team and the team is doing a serious enough investigation, it might be worth having someone on the team who is the voice of the person being investigated, whose job is not to investigate or assist in the investigation, but is to balance those rights and advocate for the rights of the person being investigated. And it's a concept I've been playing around with. It's a notion that I haven't seen written anywhere. I don't think I did look, and I didn't find any TNS professionals writing about this specifically. Yeah.
I mean, it's how the U.S. justice system is supposed to work, right? It's adversarial. Everybody has a advocate.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. It obviously, you can't do that for every single investigation that a TNS team is running. But I think if things get serious enough, and if there's a likelihood that you may need to involve law enforcement and stuff like that, it might be a good idea. And there might be something to be said about developing a framework around how that can happen. So that's one thing that I have in my mind, and I haven't finalized the thought yet.
I'd almost like to change topics just slightly and say, there's a lot of fun that comes with this job too. And there's a lot of, at the end of the day, a lot that makes you feel good. And I'd like to hear, what's the thing that you'll take away from here? What's the thing that at the end of the day just makes you feel like you did something really good?
I will jump in. I know what we do is important. I know it because, let me first say, our job is very much often thankless. We are everybody's bad time because we have to go in and we have to, basically, we have to adjudicate even though we are not the justice system, we have to make decisions sometimes on things that other people feel that they were justified in doing. And we have to say no. You can't do that. However, again, we do make a major impact, and sometimes it is life or death. And there are days that I sign off and I know that I have possibly saved a life, or I have possibly made somebody rethink doing something pretty terrible, or I have possibly made somebody who was going through one of the worst things in their life. Like they felt like they were completely alone. But I was there and I said, hey, I care, and I'm going to make sure that tomorrow is not as rough. And that has to do with harassment. That has to do with multiple other things. So yeah, that is what makes this job worthwhile.
I think everyone should answer this question. I really want to hear from both Emerson and Frog as well. But I, for me, the answer is a little different than Bella because, yeah, those days are good. And they make me feel good too. But I think the highest one for me is sometimes I can hate the outcome. Sometimes I can think that objectively, you know, we may have at the same time saved someone and at the same time made someone's life worse, for example. And even if the outcome is negative for one person, what really, really I strive for and that gives me a sense of the biggest sense of fulfillment is feeling like I got to the bottom of something. You can never know because it's the internet. And I'm not the police, right? I'm not investigating people's lives. And so I will likely never have confirmation of many of the situations that we investigate. Mm-hmm. But feeling like I reached the place finally that I am confident as I can be in the explanation, in the understanding of what has happened with evidence, and that the conclusions that we have reached are reasonably based on the evidence that we have, then I'm at peace. It's very hard for me, and it's obviously a balance because we don't have all the time in the world to investigate every case, but it's very hard for me to agree to stop looking to something while I still have doubts, while I still feel like I don't have the full picture, while I still feel like something here isn't adding up, you know, the nagging feeling. And so, yeah, for me, I think the biggest pleasure is feeling I got it. Yeah. This is what I think it happened.
That's the start of every good detective novel. Something's not adding up.
Yeah.
I would say that for me, when I feel like I've made the biggest wins is when I've been able to perceive and present an imminent risk. I do enjoy the other aspects of the job because trust and safety is a job of many hats, being the investigator or being the helper for certain people that are in hard times. But being able to present the idea that there is a risk that is most likely to occur and can lead to some of these things that might require a future investigation or require people that need help, and then mitigate those risks, is when I feel like I've made the biggest impact.
Yeah. And for me, I will say I find a lot of satisfaction in being able to take the data and show everyone something new. But there's actually something I find much more satisfying in this field, which is very different from that. There's a lot of ways in which community is very challenging, but there's a particular case that I think about a lot that is very important to me. There are a lot of communities that take it as a given that somebody's presence is self-justifying, almost regardless of their behavior, because they are consistently present. There's a sort of sunk cost fallacy that comes with their presence. Wikipedia calls these characters unblockables. But a lot of communities don't realize how much harm individuals can do until they are gone, until somebody has found the pattern of behavior and rooted it out. And for a lot of these communities, they often spring to life again, like a huge pressure is lifted off of the individuals in that community. And that moment is hard to achieve, but I do appreciate it immensely.
It's important to remember that Stack Overflow, the Stack Exchange communities, these places are special. They're unlike any other place on the internet. These are people who go, they learn something unusual, unique, strange, they put a lot of time and energy into it, then they come back and they give that knowledge to the world for free, for no reason other than just it's the right thing to do. That's an unusual person. And it gives me a great deal of satisfaction to know that I and this team are here. We're not apologists for this community. We often have perspective that they don't. Mm-hmm. We often know things they don't know because of our privileged position here. But at the end of the day, I want them to know that they're special and we are going to have their back. We are going to keep them safe.
Right. Well, it's that time of the show where we shout out somebody who came onto Stack Overflow, dropped a little knowledge, shared some curiosity, and earned a badge. Today, we're shouting out a lifeboat badge winner. So congrats to Arvin Euro for answering Docker Desktop WSL update failed. If you are also wondering about that, we have the answer and put it in the show notes. I am Ryan Donovan. I edit the blog, host the podcast here at Stack Overflow. If you liked what you heard, disliked what you heard, have topics, other concerns, email me at podcast@stackoverflow.com. And if you want to connect with me directly, you can find me on LinkedIn.
And I'm Philippe Baudette, Senior Vice President of Communities for Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange. You can write to me at philippe@stackoverflow.com.
I'm Cesar M, or Cesar Monada. You can find me on the Stack Exchange and Stack Overflow websites. I am Cesar M on the sites. You can also reach me on LinkedIn. It's pretty much the only social media network where I have a public presence. And by public presence, I mean I have a profile. Do I post or interact with? No. But you can find me there, and I will respond a private message if it's interesting.
Bella, and you can find me on the Stack Exchange and Stack Overflow websites. I'm also in chat, or if you write into our contact us, if you need anything, I'm there as always.
And I'm Emerson, and you can actually find me in the Stack Overflow or Stack Exchange lobby as of late.
I'm Frog, Community Manager, and you can find me on Stack Exchange and Stack Overflow sites as well. Chat too.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.